best. There's always something for everyone, including bowling, legendary pizza, and video games.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. The Labor Department this morning reporting 303,000 jobs were created in March. That's four more than the 200,000 economists were expecting, casting more doubt on whether the Fed will lower interest rates anytime within the foreseeable future. Nearly 6 months into the war in the Middle East, the Biden administration is dramatically shifting its tone in a call with Prime Minister Netanyahu.
The president demanding Israel dramatically increase humanitarian assistance, open additional crossings, and reduce violence against civilians and aid workers. Biden also calling for an immediate ceasefire.
ABC News Chief White House Correspondent Mary Bruce. Today, President Biden visiting the site of the Baltimore Bridge collapse and meeting with relatives of the six workers that were killed. A powerful nor'easter has left hundreds of thousands of homes and businesses without power in New England. In New Hampshire, a woman was killed when her home's propane tank exploded after a tree fell on it. This is ABC News. Communities from South Texas to the Northeast and Maine are putting the final touches on plans for Monday's solar eclipse.
The highest of high-end fashion sunglasses can set you back more than $1,000. But ophthalmologist Dr. Brian Boxer-Wachler says that during an eclipse, they're useless.
Solar eclipse sunglasses are about 1,000 times darker than regular sunglasses. They have that much additional protection.
Many big box and convenience stores still have supplies of approved eclipse glasses for as little as $2 a piece. Jim Ryan, ABC News, Dallas.
An attorney for Kansas City Chiefs star Rashee Rice was speeding in a Lamborghini when he lost control before a chain reaction crash in Dallas over the weekend left four people injured. Rice now says he takes full responsibility for the accident, and Rice plans to compensate the victims of the crash. When asked why Rice walked away from the crash, his attorney said that's still being investigated. No charges have been announced in the crash. Dave Packer, ABC News.
The best place to catch a Friday night fish dinner is the Phoenix Center. Dine in or carry out delicious deep fried or baked fish. The Phoenix Center serves food and fun every day. The pizza is out of this world. And after a great meal, make it an even better night with a game of bowling. The Phoenix Center is family fun at its best. Open at 10 Monday through Sunday. The Phoenix Center, the area's go-to spot for good times and great food.
The Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service has been serving the Southwest Wisconsin area since 1889. We pride ourselves on doing things the right way, paying attention to even the smallest details, and assisting your family every step of the way in your time of need. I'm Mark Jelinek. I am proud the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service still represents the values that have helped us be trusted and depended on for many generations. Learn more at PrattFuneralService.com.
Today's forecast calls for a high of 50 degrees, north to northeast winds around 10 miles per hour. Clear and chilly tonight, a low of 27. 54 Saturday with sunshine. Saturday night, increasing clouds and breezy, a low of 34. 48 on Sunday. Right now, WRCO, our temperature has been rising now past the midnight mark. It is after a low of 29, we're up to 41 degrees. Today's morning show is next.
For generations, the Cairns family has been rooted in Richland County as small business owners. At Julie Cairns State Farm, you will find a local, dedicated team that leads with honest intentions to properly protect you. Yes, saving money is important, yet so is doing business with local professionals that will be there when you need them. We're here to participate in your lives, in our community's growth, and in helping create opportunities to make positive changes. Yes, you can save money, and yes, we will offer you remarkable service. Yet most importantly, our core values will make you proud to do business with us. Like a good neighbor, Julie Cairns State Farm is there.
Walsh's Ace knows that window screens can get punctured or torn. Let Walsh's Ace repair your torn or punctured screen. The experts at Walsh's Ace have the know-how. Looking for paint? The Ace Paint Department at Walsh's Ace has state-of-the-art equipment that can color match anything you have to paint. You can count on Walsh's Ace for everything from screens to paint. That's Walsh's Ace Hardware in Richland Center.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
Richland Electric Cooperative would like to invite its members to the 88th Annual Meeting, Saturday, April 13th. The meeting will be held at the Richland Electric Cooperative Service Center, located at 30 East Robb Road. Registration will take place at 8:30. The business meeting follows at 9. All members registered will receive a $20 bill credit. Just a reminder, your registration label can be found on the front page of the Wisconsin Energy Cooperative News Magazine. We hope to see you Saturday, April 13th, for the 88th Annual Meeting of Richland Electric Cooperative.
WRCO Studios, proudly sponsored by the Richland Family Restaurant. Your community, your music, your favorite dining spot.
On the first part of our morning show today on WRCO Radio, we are talking about the State of Wisconsin Board on Aging and Long-Term Care. In the studio with us today, we have Vicki Meyer, who will be talking a little bit about the program, which is celebrating its 30th anniversary, and a volunteer, Maureen, is in the studio to kind of describe what that looks like, a typical day for a volunteer. So, good morning, Vicki. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. So, tell me about this, BOALTC. Is the acronym.
Yeah. So the Board on Aging and Long-Term Care is an independent state agency. We're kind of under different statutes with the Older Americans Act that allow us to do the work that we do in long-term care settings throughout Wisconsin. There's different federal statutes that relate to it, and then the Wisconsin state statute actually regarding the Board on Aging and Long-Term Care. And then just a little bit about how we kind of, so I work more with the Volunteer Ombudsman Program. There's three branches under it. There's Medigap, the Long-Term Care Ombudsman, and a volunteer program. So that's where I'm specifically at, is a volunteer.
Explain to me, the word ombudsman. I was not familiar with that. What is that?
Yeah, so that word is a word that a lot of people don't know. I have to admit, it's not something I had ever heard until I got this position. A lot of our volunteers do a great job in explaining that and basically just advocate for the residents. They protect and promote the rights of long-term care consumers. They work with those who are age 60 and over, as well as others that are involved in their care, but basically just advocating for those residents and making sure their rights are being upheld.
How long have you been with the program, Vicki?
Oh, gosh, I believe it's been 2.5 years, just about.
Okay. So did you know a lot about it before you took the job?
Honestly, no. I was looking for a change in career and just happened to go on the state Wisconsin government website to look for positions, saw it and applied, thought it might be good. I was in advocacy work before this and just worked out.
So it's a state program, and how do people apply and everything? Is there a website that they go to?
Yeah, so the website for the Board on Aging is longtermcare.wi.gov, and they can learn all about the different programs we have under the Board on Aging. They can learn about what their rights are as residents. They can learn how to become a volunteer ombudsman.
So is it for people that they're in a residential facility, or people that are still at their own homes, or how do you look at it?
So the regional ombudsman, part of that long-term care program, they work with those who are in assisted livings, in skilled nursing facilities, the CBRF, the community-based residential facilities, things like that. Whereas the volunteer program just goes into the skilled nursing facilities right now. And then there was, as of September of 2023, it's a pilot project right now in kind of the northern part of the state where they're going into assisted livings and kind of doing the same thing with the volunteer program.
Do you work all over the state or in just this part of the state?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I work primarily just in the counties down in like the southwestern region. But we do have staff and volunteers that are located throughout the state of Wisconsin.
Okay. Well, let's talk to a volunteer. We have Maureen in the studio. Maureen, how long have you volunteered?
I've been a volunteer for over 5 years. And I go to only one facility, which is close to my home. And so I go once a week. And initially, I was trained. We have notebooks on the statutes and so I go once a week and I talk to the residents and I tell them that I'm there for them and to be the middle person between them and the facility and if they have any issues or problems. And I can help them anonymously if they don't want to use their name, or I can do, or if they give me permission, I can use their name and go and give exact details to the facility on what they feel their needs aren't being met. And so, you know, because a resident, I stress that this is their home and that they have every right for people to enter their room with knocking, or else, you know, they have their right to their showers or being able to choose their own clothes. And there's many details in a resident's life that, they have power to make choices and just to remind them that they have those rights. So that's kind of what I do. And I can go anytime during the day and any day of the week. I'm not supposed to really have a set schedule because it's good to go in kind of without anyone knowing I'm going in.
And different times,
yes,
and everything.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Even on weekends. Sometimes I go on a weekend and visit people, and the residents are really nice people, and they're kind and interesting and appreciative, and you really develop a relationship with them after a while.
Sounds like you've made some friends then.
Yeah. It's nice, and the program also is pretty informative, and they give you a lot of tools to help you do a better job in volunteering. So I get a benefit from that as well.
Did it take much training?
I think it was like a couple of full work days at where a group of volunteers that were just starting all met, and there were a couple teachers, and they gave us a big notebook full of the statutes and what to expect, and also there's a 1-800 number with the Ombudsman program, and I have that readily accessible when I'm at the facilities, and that's for the residents and their families to call at any time they feel that there's some kind of issue that needs to be addressed there. And that number is 1-800-815-0015. And I also call that number sometimes after I leave a facility. If I don't know the answer on how to address an issue, or a regional ombudsman can go to their facility and investigate it herself, or they can guide me on how to proceed and how to help that resident.
If a resident has some cognitive issues, I'm sure you have to kind of weigh that too, like,
yes,
you know, whether or not it's legit or not, but you probably have to take everything seriously, don't you?
Yeah, I think so. Yes. And you get to know the people too. Not only the residents, but the staff. So you can kind of weigh all those circumstances together. And, you know, as a volunteer, I don't have very much teeth. But some of these residents are far away from home, or they don't have any family members, or they don't get any visitors. So I may be the only visitor they ever get to see. So these residents are really appreciative that I'm there, and you know, it kind of makes it worthwhile too.
I bet. For some of the things you talked about for the residents, it offers them some freedom, and it kind of sticks up for their rights too.
Yes.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And it, you know, it really makes you think this is their home. They're there 24 hours. And so
it's been rewarding for you.
Yes, very. Yes.
Do you encourage other people to maybe check it out?
I do. I think there's a good support staff, and you learn a lot. And I was an advocate for my mom, and I knew how important that was to do that job. And I think of these people without any family, and you know, I feel good about helping them.
Yeah, it's a great thing because you think about that, your own parents and things like that, and knowing that someone else, you know, you kind of want everybody to be treated equal like your parents were too.
Yeah, and I don't have children, so, you know, who knows? They're by the grace of God.
Somebody will be taking care of you
yes,
someday, maybe.
Yes.
Sure. It sounds like a really awesome program here, Vicki. Anything else you wanted to add about it or things like that?
Yeah, so just a little bit more about what they do. Like Maureen said, they just go in once a week. The visits take anywhere from a couple hours, 2 to 3 hours. They do have the initial training that they go through, and then we offer monthly virtual presentations for the volunteers. And the great thing about it is we record all of those, so if they can't make it, we send it out to them. They can watch it at their convenience. Like Maureen said, when they go in to visit with residents, we don't tell them you have to go at this time. They work it into their schedule, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., any day of the week, whatever works for them. You know, a lot of times you're not just going in and hearing concerns from residents. I mean, there are those days that you do have those concerns that are brought up. But a lot of times, like Maureen said, you're there visiting with people that maybe don't have anybody else. So you get to hear some incredible stories from these residents. For myself, I get to learn a lot about their past and just hearing things. I love going with the volunteers when they do that. And if you're somebody that is interested in making that difference in somebody's life, you can learn more about becoming a volunteer. You can go to the website, thelongtermcare.wi.gov. And there's an application on there, and that's kind of where that process starts, is just applying and then talking to us and finding out more about that.
It's an awesome program. So this is the one that you mainly focus on in your job then?
Yeah, so my role is just kind of overseeing the volunteers. I go once in a while, I'll go on facility visits with them. We'll go to resident council together. And then just being a support for them, because the work that they do is truly... you know, we're just grateful for them being in there. The regional ombudsman cannot make it to all the facilities, and they're really building these relationships by going in weekly and seeing these residents. And, you know, we cannot thank them enough for what they do.
So the volunteers are assigned to specific facilities. Is that how it works then?
Yeah. So like in Richland County, there's two nursing homes. Volunteer is usually placed wherever is closest to them. We want to make sure that there's like no conflict of interest that would be an issue. And again, they just get placed wherever is kind of close to them so that it's easy or convenient travel wise.
So you could have a full-time job and still do this too, couldn't you?
Oh, definitely. A lot of our volunteers are retired, but we have had people who, you know, they have a regular full-time job and they have kids at home, and it's a little tougher fitting it in, but anybody can, you know, as long as they're over 18, anybody can do this.
I know there are some events coming up where people can learn more. Tell me about the event on the 24th of April.
Yeah, so I believe it's the Richland Shopping News. They're hosting the Let the Good Times Roll for the Senior Expo. I believe it's the first one back in person since COVID, and that is going to be from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Wednesday, April 24th, and that'll be at the Richland Community Senior Center.
If there are people that maybe they have a family member that they would like to have a visit from a volunteer, is that another way that they can, you know, maybe contact you?
Yeah. So if they have questions, you know, specifically for a regional ombudsman, if they'd like to stop in and just ask if the volunteers can stop by and see their loved one, If people have questions relating to like Medicare, Medicaid, insurance kind of questions, we'll have a booth set up there that they can bring all those questions to us then.
There are a lot of questions regarding those topics, aren't there?
Definitely, yeah.
So do you have to be pretty well versed in that, Vicki, in terms of knowing where to send them and have the answers and things like that?
Yes and no. That's what I love about my role is when it comes to those detailed insurance kind of questions, I direct them right to Medigap, the helpline. They are licensed insurance agents. They know all the ins and outs of that stuff. I just give them that 1-800 number or refer them over to them. So if anybody does have those questions, they can come and visit at the booth that day, or they can call 1-800-242-1060.
And learn about all of the things that you offer and learn about being a volunteer as well, I guess.
Definitely, yes.
Sure. And I'm guessing, Maureen, you encourage people, too.
I do.
Do you try to recruit a little bit?
Yes, I do. Amongst my circles, but so I have already have, Vicki has interviewed someone that I had told about. And that's how I learned about the ombudsman program. I met a volunteer ombudsman and she was telling me what she does. And I was thinking, well, I can do that. That would be really something I can do because you really can do your own hours. So I look at my weekly calendar and I see what days I'm free and I think, well, I'll stop and visit, Wednesday afternoon or whatever. So it's nice that you can kind of, you don't need someone over your shoulder. You can do this on your own.
Yeah, make your own schedule.
Yes.
I'm guessing that you hear a lot of stories.
I do.
You hear a lot of history, don't you?
Yes, I do. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of times you get to follow the resident through the whole process of their stay there and transitions and things.
Do you play some games and put some puzzles together and things like that too?
Sometimes, yes. It's pretty fun.
I bet it is.
Yeah.
Sounds like it's really rewarding. Yeah. Vicki, how can people find out more about your program again?
So they can give a call to the 1-800-815-0015 or go to longtermcare.wi.gov, and that will give them all the information. If they have questions, they can look on there. And then there is a tab that they can click on to let us know that they're interested in becoming a volunteer.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to add today, either of you?
I just want to say thank you to our volunteers. It's actually Volunteer Appreciation Month. And so we had a big presentation for them yesterday and just got them in on that. And we had little certificates and presents for them. So just thanking them for all the hard work that they do and just knowing that we really appreciate them and couldn't do this without them.
How many volunteers are we talking about then?
Throughout the state, we operate out of 36 counties. So we probably have average 60 to 100 volunteers right now. It did go down a little bit from COVID, but we're kind of working on building that back up.
Yeah, that's picked back up a little bit as well, I'm guessing. And getting into facilities is a little easier, too, than it was.
Definitely, yeah.
Sure, that's a plus side. Well, thanks for coming in today,
thank you.
Both of you.
Thank you.
It's great to learn about this. Vicki Meyer joining us, NWRCO, and volunteer Maureen as well, State of Wisconsin Board on Aging and Long-Term Care. And we also learned what an ombudsman was today. Scandinavian word, I think, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, I had to look it up.
Yeah.
But it's a learning thing for me here on The Morning Show. We appreciate it. Coming up, Steve Volk is in the house talking about his retirement as a physician assistant in the area. That's next on The Morning Show.
Hi, this is Dan Miller, Old Cooch Books and Libation. Now, how do you like this first real snowstorm of April? We knew it had to come, and it's getting people back into that hideaway mode. But if you come down to Old Cooch Books and Libations, it's nice and warm in here. I could even give you a little taste of wine and look at the books, and you don't have to buy anything. Old Cooch Books and Libations, downtown Richland Center.
Now is a good time to reflect on your pharmacy needs. If you're thinking about switching, the place to go for great service from people who care is the Richland Family Prescription Center. The staff and pharmacists do whatever it takes to help you. They're never too busy to answer questions. Their goal is to be your primary source of healthcare information. With everyone watching every penny, they know it's dangerous and unhealthy not to take your medicine as prescribed by your doctor. They've always matched any price and honor any prescription program. They also work with you and your doctor to find less expensive medications. And the Richland Family Prescription Center features free in-town delivery and free mailing. The Richland Family Prescription Center, where you and your family always come first.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
Central Boarding House Antiques. This historic boarding house, located at 339 West Seminary Street, is over 130 years old and has 17 unique rooms with a large variety of antiques for sale. Central Boarding House Antiques is open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., and Saturday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Make plans to visit Central Boarding House Antiques, located across from Quick Trip in downtown Richland Center. Call 647-7358 or visit their Facebook page today.
On our morning show today from WRCO, we have a real treat. A good friend of ours, Steve Wolk, is in the studio with us, longtime healthcare worker in the area, physician's assistant. And Steve, good to have you in the studio.
Thank you, Phil. Nice to be here. Like I said, this is the first time I've ever been on the radio, ever been interviewed. So I'm trusting that you will hold my hand and lead the way.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Just like I've trusted in you a few times over the years, you
know.
Thank you. Yep.
Thank you.
Had to go in for a little, you know, you could put me in a body cast, but if I couldn't talk, that was a problem. So
that
I had
was
to go
a problem. That was a problem. So we'd have to just say, Phil, say ah, and we'll see what's going on back your throat.
All yeah, right.
You seem to have done okay that way.
So. We're doing all right. So 40 years in the healthcare field. Does it seem like it's been that long?
No, it doesn't. But I can honestly say there's some wonderful people that see me on the street or see me on the sidewalk in Richland Center in Spring Green. They say, do you remember when you did this or that for me? And I'll say, I remember the person. I remember doing the best I could for him. But the specifics of what we exactly did on a given situation, I don't really say I can remember, but then I just sort of play along with them and they'll describe it and they'll go, oh yeah, I remember that. And
kind of a blur.
Yeah. And I'll say, I'm glad you're doing well. So we must have done something right for you way back then.
So were all 40 years spent in this area, Steve, or were you elsewhere before
no.
this?
No. Well, it's kind of a long story. So I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, and did my medical training at a college called St. Louis University. And finished that program. The end of that training was called a preceptorship, and that preceptorship had rotation sites all around the United States. And since I was single at the time, I had the liberty to just pretty much go where I was interested in going. So I finished my training on the Crow Indian Reservation in Montana, southwestern Montana, southeastern Montana. So I spent the summer there. And that's where I met Martine. And Martine was a floor nurse. She was a nurse at the Crow Indian Hospital in Crow Agency, Montana. I completed my training there and was offered my first position as a PA in an adjacent town just on the edge of the reservation called Hardin, Montana. And that's where I started my career. And I worked there for 2 years, and I had the luxury of working with four excellent physicians, and I was the PA in a county, Bighorn County, Montana, had about 15,000 people, which was roughly, I think, about the same population as Richland County, except Bighorn County was like four times as big. Bighorn County was as big as some small states back east. But we were the only practice in that hole for all those people. And in those days, we all worked side by side. So I was basically had the opportunity to like do a mini residency where I went through my training in school, which was a 3-year program. But in those days, I worked with these four doctors. And I took call from 8 a.m. Saturday morning to 8 a.m. Sunday morning in the ER every weekend. So I got a lot of experience, a lot of good training. And Martine, while I was doing all that, decided to go get her master's degree as a family nurse practitioner in Kentucky. So she went off to Kentucky. I was still working in Montana. And then when she finished her training, we had a decision to make of where we wanted to start our life together. She wanted to stay out west because she loved the mountains. She loved to ski. And I wanted to get a little bit closer back to the Midwest to be near my family down in St. Louis. And she said, okay, she'll go to the Midwest if we could move someplace that has snow. So I said, okay. So we kind of looked at Minnesota and Wisconsin, and I found a job in Madison, actually, back in 1986 and worked at St. Mary's for a while. Martine finished her training from the University of Kentucky, moved up here, and one Saturday morning, all I can remember is we were reading either the State Journal or Cap Times newspaper, and she opened it up, and there was a one ad from Richland Medical Center from Dr. Barton Cook for a nurse practitioner. And she said she gave them a phone call, like in the old days, came out here for an interview, and got hired. And then 2 years later, I was offered, Martine did a very good job. She was an excellent nurse practitioner. And I was given an offer to join this practice here. So I actually started here in 1988. So basically, I had roughly about 5 years of work and experience before I started in Richland Center at different places. So of the 40 years, about 35 have been here, either in Richland Center or Spring Green.
And you were my neighbor in Little Willow.
And I was. I commuted interstate Little Willow.
Yes.
For many years, and I can remember. Well, the story of how I became your neighbor is that when we first moved here, I lived up on Crow Hill, and there was the old Crow Hill Schoolhouse where we rented for a couple years. So we're in Crow Hill above the old clinic building and the Golf Quail Run golf course. We lived there for 2 years. And then one weekend day, I used to love to bicycle and I still do. Somehow I got riding up that valley of Little Willow, and there was a for sale sign at that place. And I wrote the number down and I called, got to meet Don and Lucille. And we must have passed the interview because they offered us the opportunity to move in there and buy that place. And then we also got to meet Mr. Gilly Moe and Mr. Eldon Moore. And those gentlemen were part of the township organization.
Town board.
And they invited us over for coffee also to see who we were. And we were able to become part of the community out there. But I found that by bicycling up the valley one day.
Yeah, isn't that something?
And then, you know, once we were living there and working in the Richland Medical Center, there were quite a few days where I had to make the decision in the wintertime if I wanted to go down Quarry Hill or over Stibbe Hill, right? Because they'll go over Stibbe Hill, then you have to drive 5x14, which cars are going fast. But if you go down Quarry Hill, I remember the first time with my four-wheel drive pickup truck in a wintertime, looking down Quarry Hill thinking, okay, this is going to be interesting. Is my truck going to make this or not? But once I got the hang of it, then we did, and I did. And so that's how we got to become your neighbor up there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been rewarding work for you, I'm sure, over the years, hasn't it?
Oh, I wouldn't. It's been a blessing, and I have no regrets. I was able to work with some excellent physicians here in Richland Center. My generation of doctors, Dr. Smith and Bard and Cook and Richardson, were superb. And then I was fortunate enough to the first nursing station I worked at down in the basement of the old building was with Dr. Dick Edwards.
Okay.
And Janet Babbitt was the nurse practitioner with that group, and Connie Dunn was the medical assistant with Sue Davis. So yeah, it was a fun group, but also very committed and excellent care. So,
yeah, longtime doctors too. You know, we were very fortunate in our area to have doctors that stayed here for a long time.
Yeah, you look at that whole group; and they spent their whole careers here.
Right.
I don't know why people seem more transient now and move around more. I was, you know, Richland Center could not have been a better place for me and Martine to just by good fortune land, because we had our children here at the Richland Hospital. Then as they got a little bit older, we were lucky enough for them to start their schooling at Ithaca. You may remember that. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about some of the teachers that had good impacts on my kids. We remember both kids had Mrs. Cindy Milliken in kindergarten, and then Mrs. Mary Walton was like a first or second grade teacher. Unfortunately, she passed away young. But those teachers both had influences on both kids. And then Martine and I were both full-time, you know, healthcare providers, so we relied on the after-school care and the daycare, and June took care of Marie at least 1 year.
Yes, she did.
And then I remember the kids, when they got a little bit older, they could take the bus up to Annette Lewis's daycare for like 4 or 5 years. So, and those were both safe, excellent, good environments for the kids. So we were very happy to be out there in the school. And then thinking about when my kids were young, they spent their summers with the Sharks team, the Simon Sharks,
right,
and Denise Hanold. And that great experience with all the parents, and it was kind of a cooperative effort of all the parents putting together those swim meets and, you know, the potlucks and everything we had. And then Jesse was fortunate enough, beginning as a little kid with T-ball with Bear Valley Baseball.
Oh, yeah.
And then Ithaca Baseball. And both Ron and Barb Granger were his coach. And then sort of a few years later, Mick Hitch became one of the coaches. And that was an excellent group of little boy baseball players, because Jesse played with that team even after we moved to Spring Green up through eighth grade. And they won their league in eighth grade. If you remember, those kids and that group of boys in high school went on to win state. So,
yeah,
really good influences from a coaching standpoint, and the adults that those both Marie and Jesse got to.
Mm-hmm. Good community.
So it was great. And
I had to wonder too with Martine, how often did you go home and compare notes? You know, I saw this, and what do you think? And
well, to be honest with you, Martine does that to this very day. She, you know, processes her work day and talks about how would I handle a given medical diagnosis or workup or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
When I come home, it's like I just want to, okay, let's walk the dog and maybe turn on the radio or some music or something. And
sure.
But maybe I would talk more about how the day went if something was bugging me and I needed like reassurance or didn't quite know what to do next, stuff like that. But
well, I had to think, is it hard not to take your work home though?
Oh, well, it never ends.
Yeah.
It really never ends in medicine, because, you know, a lot of times you'll see a patient and then you'll order some tests and some of those tests get sent to Madison or, you know, Mayo or wherever they go, and you don't know the result till the next day or a couple of days after that. And then there's some patients you do worry about. You think, God, I hope, you know, we're on the right track. And, you know, you might even want to call them from home that night or the next morning and start, you know. So, yeah, it's not the kind of career where, you know, at 5 p.m. it's like, okay, you know, we're done for the day or the night.
Mm-hmm.
But that's part of the rewards, is that, you know, you're committed to your patient and you do the best you can for them. And then when God willing, things turn out well, you know, you feel good about it.
Right, exactly. Steve Wolk, our guest here on WRC Radio, and he is, you're fully retired now, is that right, Steve?
Fully retired.
Yeah, they tell me when you retire, every night is like Saturday night. I don't know if it is yet.
Well, yeah, it is, you know, it's like, okay, now I got to just do whatever I want. And the trick is, the last few years, I've actually been getting up at 4 a.m.
Oh.
Because over the years, there's been a lot more computer work to do as far as electronic health records.
Oh, yeah.
So I would try to get up so I could do an hour or two of charting before anyone else shows up at the office. So by the time the staff starts coming in and we start looking at our schedule, who we're going to take care of, I'm ready to go. So I'd get up at 4, do that before the clinic even started, and then go to bed early in the evening, probably something like you. I don't even know what time you have to get up. What time do you have to get up
for? Oh, about that time, 3:50 a.m., I think, is when it first goes off.
So when retirement came, I actually did like that schedule because I felt really good sleeping about 7 hours a night. And I thought, well, I'll keep getting up early. But now I'm starting to find out I'm starting to get up at 5. And even this morning I got up at 6. So
reprogramming that a little bit.
Reprogramming, but I still want to do my stretching exercises. And
sure.
The dog likes to go walking early in the morning when the stars are out before when it's quiet. So yeah. She gets me moving.
Oh, sure. You mentioned you grew up in the St. Louis area, Steve. And you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the 1982 World Series.
Okay. So I thought you were going to ask me about that because I think I told you I was there.
You were in St. Louis at the games.
Yes, I was. Uh-huh. I was there in person. So a little background that I think you could appreciate is that the Cardinals for St. Louis is equivalent to what the Packers mean to Wisconsin. It's a community thing. It's a cultural thing. It goes back over 100 years. And I can remember growing up with the age of transistor radios.
Sure.
And the Cardinals on the radio, and that was definitely the sound of summertime in St. Louis. And there was a station down there called KMOX. And KMOX was the equivalent of WRCO for the whole city of St. Louis. You'd get up in the morning, there'd be the news. In the wintertime, that's the station you listen to for the school closures.
Okay.
You always got the weather. And it also had all the sports teams year-round. Now, it didn't cover high school sports like you do. In fact, they didn't even really have high school sports too much on the radio. But they had the baseball Cardinals in the summer and football Cardinals in the fall and the Blues in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I grew up listening to the Cardinals on the radio, and my grandparents, it was just part of our family life, was the baseball Cardinals. I went to my first game when I was 10 in a place called Sportsman's Park. Saw that team that went on to beat the Yankees in 1964.
Oh, yeah.
And then when I was in middle school and grade school, they had a program for students that got good grades, and they'd give you free tickets if you, like, got A's and B's. So I got to go to a lot of free games on my own. And then there was a citywide thing called the Redbird Express. And the Redbird Express was the city bus system that would take teenagers pretty much to downtown St. Louis for ball games. And like for $2, you'd get in. And these city buses were just packed with kids. You can imagine how excited we were. We'd go down to the ball game. So I remember in 1966, I saw the first game the Cardinals ever played in Busch Memorial Stadium, which was the new ballpark at that time, against the Atlanta Braves with Henry Aaron and all those good Braves players.
Had recently been in Milwaukee.
Right. They had just moved. I think that was the first year in Atlanta.
Yes.
Okay. So then they moved to Atlanta. And then the 60s were a great decade for the Cardinals. But then they didn't win another pennant until 1982. So that was a big thing for the whole city of St. Louis. And in those days, before computers, the only way you could get tickets was to get in line for the box office, okay? So my brother and myself and his stepson Brad, the three of us, slept out on the sidewalk that fall, the night before tickets went on sale for that World Series, and we got tickets for game two, six, and seven of that World Series. And we got tickets for the left field bleachers, and we saw three World Series games. So what I can remember about that World Series is that the games I saw in St. Louis were all night games. Game one, I remember probably watching it on TV, but definitely listening on the radio with friends, and the Brewers beat the Cardinals that game one, 10-0.
Yeah, it was a thumping.
It was like we thought, oh my goodness, what are we getting into here? We didn't know much about the Brewers because, you know, we were all National League fans, but it was apparent that these guys could really play ball. And then in game number seven, it looked like it was a tight game.
Yeah, I think it went down to the wire.
The Cardinals won 6-3, and the Cardinals were, anyway, Andujar had them shut out until the Brewers shut out in the fifth inning, and then the Brewers scored two, but then the Cardinals went ahead and scored six runs. Not quite sure exactly who did what, but the Cardinals won 6-3. And what I can remember, and, you know, I swear this was true, and I don't know how it could have been set up this way, but I remember that the St. Louis Mounted Police went out there with horses, and I must have maybe done it right at the ninth inning, because it was probably apparent the Cardinals were going to win, but they had the Mounted Police all the way around the field to try to prevent the fans from storming the field. Well, as soon as the Cardinals won, it didn't matter. Just all these fans were running down. They had the whole field filled with people that were celebrating. And we had our little stepson, my brother's son, was there. So we just stayed in the bleachers and watched the whole thing. But all the fans went down the field. And nowadays, when a player hits a home run, you know, depending on where it is, they'll shoot off fireworks or something. But in those days, it was special if they didn't ever do that. But they shot off all the fireworks. It looked like the 4th of July. The Cardinals won the World Series. Everybody went out. By the time we left the ballpark, there was a whole street party celebration going on in downtown St. Louis. People were actually dancing on top of city buses. But there was no violence or damage or anything. It seemed like a real happy time. And so that's my memory of the World Series. And, you know, you probably know this from being a radio announcer, but Bob Uecker played for the Cardinals.
Yeah, he was on that 64 team you mentioned.
He was on the 64 team.
Yeah.
And he was the second string catcher behind Tim McCarver. And so Uecker is fondly remembered in St. Louis. And he often gets welcomed back whenever he goes down there. So I was glad to hear him on the radio again yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. It was interesting because you have a different perspective of that. You know, I was in Wausau, Wisconsin, watching on a 12-inch TV, and I was cussing the name of Daryl Porter, who we had traded away a few years before that, wound up in St. Louis, and he was the MVP of the series. You know, and it's like, why did we let him go? I think he was the MVP.
He could have been because he was the catcher that year.
Yeah, it goes back.
He was the catcher, and he only played for the Cardinals for a few years, but he played that year. And the other great member of that team in 82 in the 1980s was the manager named Whitey Herzog.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. And he was one of the all-time favorite managers because he was from that area. He grew up in on the east side, somewhere in Southern Illinois. So he had a connection, community connection down there. So.
Fun stuff.
Yeah. And
what helped the Brewers onto that, you know, the glory year that they had there was that the trade with St. Louis, too, you know, because that's how they got Vukovich and Raleigh Fingers, I think, and Ted Simmons all came.
Is that how they all came from?
And one of the guys they traded away was Sixto Lascano, who's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And he played just for a short time, I think.
And did the Cardinals get Daryl Porter then?
I don't know if it was in that same trade, but it was with Milwaukee somewhere along the
way.
Got him, so yeah. Oh, good memory, Steve.
In retrospect, it's kind of like, God, I wish the Brewers could have won it because I spent much of my baseball fandom up here,
but, absolutely.
Good
stuff.
Before then.
Yes, so you still watch and listen to baseball then. So, what are plans for retirement now, Steve? Have you got them all figured out?
Well, I'm going to be doing some traveling. My brother's got some health problems in Texas, so I was just down there about a month ago, and I think I'll be going back down there pretty soon to support him and my family down there. One thing we're going to do is next week, there's going to be another total solar eclipse.
Oh, yes.
And so, believe it or not, 7 years ago, that eclipse went from the state of Washington sort of down towards Florida. And this time, the eclipse is going from, like, Texas up to New England. And both eclipses are crossing in Missouri. So 6-7 years ago, there was one in Missouri, and there's going to be another one. And I have dear lifelong friends who have a farm down in southeast Missouri that at the previous one, they invited friends and family, had a great big weekend celebration, and they're doing it again next week. So we're going down to southeast Missouri. A little village is called Altenburg and Wittenberg and Farr, Missouri, which are very beautiful, very rural, just a few miles west of the Mississippi River down there. So Martine and I and a buddy of hers were traveling down there this weekend, and we're going to be back down there again for the eclipse.
All right.
And if you've never seen one, if you ever have a chance, it's sort of a once-in-a-lifetime thing, so it's amazing that these people are getting two of them within 6 years. But that last one was in August of 2017. It was a hot, nasty, humid day in Missouri. And it's always kind of a gamble whether or not you're going to be able to see it, because if it's a cloudy day, you know, the lighting will change, but you're not going to get the full effect. And it was sort of the weather forecast that day was for partly cloudy, which, okay, that's always kind of a good day for whatever else you want to do, except if you want to watch an eclipse, right? So the clouds broke, and there we were, and we knew exactly when it was going to happen, at least everybody, you know, we were told when it was going to happen. And the sky gradually dims from a bright blue sky to like a darker blue. And then some of the colors otherwise change just the whole landscape coloring change. It keeps getting darker and dimmer. And then when you get the total solar eclipse, you can take glasses off and look up, and stars came out. It was a nasty, hot, humid day, but during the eclipse, it felt like Wisconsin.
Isn't that something?
The temperature dropped about 10 degrees, and the birds, the way I remember, I think it got quiet. I mean, the birds either stopped singing or some started singing, and everyone was just like, you know, some people were cheering, and other people were just like in awe.
In awe,
yeah. And it only lasted about 4 minutes, and then the lighting started coming up. It was like a dimmer switch in a room. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah. Well, hopefully this is a good one, too. Hopefully it's good.
Well, I've heard.
Clear.
I'm almost afraid to look at the weather forecast, but I was just listening to a broadcast on the radio, and some scientist guy who goes to a lot of eclipses says even if it's a gray day, it's overcast, they say it's pretty impressive because it goes from gray to almost completely black, completely dark. And then the lighting will come back up again. So either way.
Either way.
Yeah, it should be. We're good. We're going.
Yeah, I was going to say. You'll still get a thrill either way.
Yeah, it's going to be all this good old-fashioned German comfort food down there with friends. And
oh, boy. Put your feet up.
Absolutely.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the air with us, Steve, and great to have you along here. And
thanks
for all you've done for the community and your loyalty to the area, Richland Medical Center and Spring Green area through the years.
Well, thank you, Phil. I feel the same way about you, actually, for listening to you on the radio and supporting all those kids. And so you've done a lot for the community also, and I thank you for what you've done.
Appreciate that. Appreciate you coming in today. Steve Wall, good friend of the studio here at WRCO Radio, now retired physician's assistant.
Thank you, Phil.
The former PA.
Yes, sir.
We can report to you as that.
Yes, sir.
The morning show continues in a moment from WRCO.
It's more than living, it's living well. Now might be the right time to consider the advantages of assisted living. Schmidt Woodland Hills is offering all private rooms in their Westview assisted living community. We are fully staffed and prepared to care for your loved ones with the dignity and respect they deserve. When only the highest quality of care will do, remember Schmidt Woodland Hills. Call Westview manager Bobby Stoltz at 608-647-8931 with questions or for more information.
Hi, I'm Steve Fuller, currently a Richland Electric Co-op director and have served since 2012. Obtaining knowledge and continuing education are of the utmost importance to me and our Richland Electric Cooperative. Safety, reliability, sustainability, and affordability are the core objectives which are very important guidelines used by Richland Electric Co-op. Solar implementing, succession planning, and the untimely COVID event were critical parts of the team delegations I participated in. I, Steve Fuller, would appreciate your vote and support on the upcoming election. The April 13th, 2024 annual meeting will begin at 9 o'clock a.m. sharp. Be sure to mark your ballots and sign your envelopes. All ballots are due by 4 o'clock p.m. April 12, 2024. Thank you.
Welcome to Pratt Chat. Pratt Chat is a service of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service of Richland Center in Muscadet. Join us each week for a conversation with Mark Jelenic of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service for answers to questions that we're all hesitant to ask. Pratt Chat is sponsored by the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service.
Mark Jelenic, we have some more questions for you today. So what happens if a death occurs overseas?
Sure. So what happens if, let's say you're on vacation and you're overseas and death happens? What will happen is the local medical examiner or the coroner, whatever that particular country has for their death investigation, will take your body, try to figure out, if they don't know who you are or who your next of kin is. So at that point, the person either in the other country would call back to us. We would then facilitate and coordinate with that country of how to get your body back to us. So what we do is a lot of times the embassies get involved in order to get bodies transferred overseas, either to America or out of America. So if let's say a death happens here and we have to ship overseas, what would happen is we would get a hold of the local embassy of that country. The closest embassies are usually in Chicago. We call them up. They help us with the paperwork of how do we get that person overseas. Are they going to be in a casket? Are they going to be cremated? Those rules change on what is allowed, what is not allowed. With cremated remains, we've had to have all the documents translated into that other language. So then we need to find somebody that can translate English into the language that of the country that we are going to go to is an option. We also have to figure out the airports. If we're going to fly within the United States, you're allowed to do certain things. Funeral homes understand how to do that. But it's the same thing as going through customs with a body. What does that country allow you to do? What do they not allow you to do? So a lot of times, if you die overseas, you can call the funeral home back in America or have the family get a hold of us. We will then find that person's body. We'll talk to our representatives here in that country's embassy who will then facilitate to get that person out of that country back to America. So it is something, it's not easy. It takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of different organizations to be involved with that. What is allowed to come home with that body? What is allowed to be shipped out with that body? So certain things, it's only the body, maybe with a hospital gown. Sometimes objects are allowed to be put with you. A lot of times objects are not allowed to be put with you because they just want the body because we have to get through customs and other things that go along with it. If you fly in the United States, let's say you happen to die in Arizona and you want to come back to Wisconsin. That's a lot simpler thing to facilitate because it's within the country. So we could talk to a funeral home down there. Once again, we locate the body. We figure out what we need to do to get out of the state, either for paperwork, what they require, what the airlines require. And then the funeral home will call the airlines and we'll set up flights. We'll get you flown back to our local, our closest airport that will accept bodies, which from Richland Center is Milwaukee, because not all airports will even accept people. Madison does not, La Crosse does not, Milwaukee does, Chicago does, and Minneapolis does. So we have to kind of facilitate that with the different airlines, where they're coming out of. But getting into and out of another country does pose a lot of issues, because we have to follow the rules of that country. We have to figure out who's in charge of that country, where their representatives are at. So it is quite a process. It's a very doable thing. We also suggest to people that do travel a little bit, it doesn't even have to be a lot, is that you look into like a traveler's insurance, where if death happens in another country, they will actually get your body back home. They'll take care of all the fees. They'll pay everything. They'll pay for your flights, your transportation, everything like that, where you may not die overseas, but for a few hundred